Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
Hi, listeners. Wow, are you in for a treat? I just had the opportunity of interviewing, connecting with Laurel Donnellan and Daryl Brown, two courageous leaders in their own way, who have a lot for us to learn about courage in life and courage in leadership. I'm really excited to share this with the world. We explore the first principle of the Donnellan method. So we have 12 principles. Courage is the first one, so what a great place to start. We talk about courage with Laurel and Daryl in three lenses, really past, present, future, and specifically around history, right? What's some courageous history we can all learn about and learn from? Healing, where are we today? How can we leverage courage as a form of healing? And then hope. How do we think about the future and how do we move forward accessing some of our own courage as we think about living better, making the world a better place? So I'm thrilled for you to join us on this journey around courage. I'm here with Laurel Donnellan, founder and CEO of Compassionate Leader Circle, dream doula, woman of many hats and talents and capabilities, and Daryl Brown, former executive in media, active member of the Dallas community. And we're talking today about courage. It is the first of 12 principles in the Donnellan Leadership Method. And, you know, these 12 principles are broken down into past, present, future. So we're going to be spending some time talking about the past. We talk about courage because it's really, I call it, and Laurel, I'm curious, I call it the ticket on the train, right? Like you can kind of do a lot of work and a lot of thinking, but if you don't access courage, not a lot of like really transformative stuff can happen. Why start with courage?
Well, I like what you said. You know, that is true. That is all true. I started developing this method in graduate school many, many years ago. And then I did a bunch of quantitative interviews. And one of the first people I interviewed was an amazing casting director. And I interviewed her and she told me the story that she wanted to be in show business. And her goal was to be Lily Tomlin's understudy, but she didn't look like Lily Tomlin. And she, like through just sheer will and shape-shifting, she got the part to be Lily Tomlin's understudy in a big movie. So we had this long interview and I got to see her work and it was amazing. And then she came back to me like 3 days later and she said, I forgot to talk to you about courage. Mm-hmm. Courage has to come first. And, you know, that was it. That's when we put courage first because of her.
Yeah. I love it. I didn't know that. I've known you for a while now and I didn't know that anecdote. So courage is the beginning of sort of our ticket on the transformation train, and it's the beginning of past. And so today we're going to be talking about courage as a principle. And then the practice that supports that is this idea of promoting responsible risks. And so we're going to be talking about that because I know, you know, risk gets a lot of maybe bad rap, but, you know, we can only be certain of so many things before we make decisions and move forward. Also, we're going to be talking about history, where we've come from, healing, where we are today, how are we helping ourselves heal, and then hope. How do we look forward and think about hope for the future? And, you know, there's this book, Hope is Not a Strategy. I think hope is absolutely a strategy. And I'm curious, Daryl, about put you on the spot. How do you feel about this statement about hope as a strategy?
I wouldn't call it a strategy. I think hope comes from within. And hope is really, it's about abundance for me. Hope is about, do you believe that there is enough for everybody and there's love in the world, and do you believe that there's a little bit of love in everyone you meet? And that there, do you believe that deep down their intentions are for the betterment of mankind? So do you believe in humanity? And when I talk about humanity, I'm talking about, do you believe in the humanness and the positive forwardness that our society can get to if we all work together? So, yeah, I don't know if it's a strategy. I think it's for me, it's a feeling from within.
Well, actually, that brings me the good segue to, as we think about history and past and really courage, if you look back in your life, is there a place that comes from for you?
You know, I really appreciate, number one, this opportunity to talk about this, because I don't know that I would have thought about it in this way had I not been asked to think about it before we started this podcast. So, you know, historically, I have been very fortunate. You know, I had a professional life that was fantastic. You know, I got to do things that I never thought I'd get to do. I got to do things that I was passionate about. I got to do things that impacted those around me. I got to do things that helped make people feel better about themselves, which is, again, along the lines of hope. You know, I got to lean into my passion. So how does that happen? You know, and we talk about historical figures. I think that there are figures who help shape who you are. And I was in the media business and was fortunate enough to meet a lot of impactful people. And I mean by that, they were able to impact millions, millions. You know, one was a chance encounter. Another was one where I actually sat down and was friends with, and we had several lunches together and we spent quality time together. And I thought about the easy one, you know, historical figures, leaders, courage, faith, which was Martin Luther King, because I am a Black man of the 60s. I was 15 years old when Martin Luther King was assassinated. I lived through the civil rights era. I lived through the Vietnam War era. I got to witness society's take on both of those demonstrative times in the lives of especially a teenager in the 60s. Oh my God. You know, and Laurel and I got to do that in different ways. You know, we got through Woodstock, we got through the hippie era, but all of these had an impact on who we are today. So the historical figure that I zeroed in on was Muhammad Ali. I had a chance encounter with Muhammad Ali. I didn't know it, but it really changed the way I looked at life. First of all, Muhammad Ali's original name was Cassius Clay, right? And he was a boxer. And I think he won the Olympics. I think it was 64. It might have been 60, but I think it was 60 or 64. He won the Summer Olympics heavyweight champion. So he was an Olympic champion, gold medal. And he came back, he turned pro, and the Vietnam War was raging. And our society was all behind the Vietnam War. We were behind because we were given a lot of crap from the media, and we believed it. Mm-hmm. We believed in what the media was telling. We believed in what President Johnson was telling us in the mid-60s. And I say we, everyone. Now, I lived on a red line street in New York where only Black families lived, but I felt safe there. And we played stickball and kickball and football all in the streets. But I remember distinctly listening to Cassius Clay's heavyweight fights on the radio. I remember how much impact that had on us. I mean, we were like, what was it? Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, right? He was fabulous. He was like, what a hero, a marker in being demonstrative about who you are and not being afraid to say who you are. When he said, I am the greatest, you believe that he was the greatest.
For those of you who are listening and not seeing, you could see Daryl light up light up in talking about this. Here's my question, then I want to turn it over to Laurel. But as you think about Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, where does courage come up for you when you think of him?
So in 66, he was drafted because the draft was going on, Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And he said, I'm not going. He stood up. First of all, he changed his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali. So think about what Islam is today and think about what Islam was in 1966, right? People, Americans, white America did not want to hear anything about Islam, and you're the heavyweight champion of the world and you're not going to Vietnam and you want to be called Muhammad Ali.
When, to remind, the country was behind the war.
There you go. There you go. So when we talk about faith, when we talk about courage, this guy stood up and said, I'm not going. I'm a black man. Yes, I know it's 1966. I know. And now he's in alignment with Martin Luther King in 66. He says, and he says, the Viet Cong did nothing to me. Why am I going to go over and shoot them? Right? You know? Right. I'll give it. You can look up the exact quote. So in 1967, they stripped him of his heavyweight title. Not only did society say, I'm not going to call you Muhammad Ali, and you're not going to be the heavyweight champion of the world because you're not doing what you're supposed to do. He had the courage to stand by his belief. He was a conscientious objector. And what society said was, okay. And what the law said was, okay, well, you're going to jail. So now you have a black man, right, in the middle of the civil rights era, saying, defying justice, supposedly. The amount of courage that he had to do that, to say that, and say, don't call me Cassius Clay, call me Muhammad Ali, is so powerful. So powerful, and willing to say he knew he was going to get stripped of his heavyweight title in 1967. And that's exactly what happened. And they wanted to put him in jail, but during the appeals process, they didn't get to put him in jail. And eventually in 70, I think, 1970, the Supreme Court overturned. But it was he missed 3 years of the prime of his career, right? So they robbed him of that. When he came back, he had to fight his way back into championship shape and get his championship back. Oh, by the way, when the Supreme Court did that in the 70s, our society had turned on the Vietnam War. So now all of a sudden, his stance was upheld by the highest court in the land. So, now the Supreme Court mirrors what was going on in the world, right? In our world. The amount of courage that it took for him to do that was amazing. And a friend of mine during the time that he was out, Howard Cosell was a big media guy back then. He stood by Muhammad Ali. He supported him outwardly on his radio broadcasts, on his TV broadcasts. He had Muhammad Ali and called him Muhammad Ali. He would not call him Cassius Clay. And supported him in a way that was very cool, yeah. Very cool at the time.
Yeah. No, it's incredible. And, you know, I was reading a bit about courage and you think like, how does someone access courage? And there's like a lot of research about it. But this idea that inaction is far more dangerous than the action he took, right? The idea that like, if I don't stand up, if I go to war, if I accept this, it's like, it is so anathema to what he believed in. He had to push forward and be courageous. It's incredible. So Laurel, fast forward to today. And, you know, as I think about Daryl's story around war, race relations, religious relations, I'm like, huh, well, we've come far, but have we really? Right? Here we are. And so as you think about like, whether it's Daryl's story or courage today, where does courage come up for you?
First of all, I think Muhammad Ali is a beautiful example of leadership in that he took risks and then he encouraged others, including Howard Cosell and Daryl and anyone else who was in earshot of Muhammad Ali. That's what real leadership is you take a risk and And there's ripple effects, right? You encourage other people to be brave. But yes, here we are. And last week, I had the privilege of hearing Jane Fonda speak for the second time. Jane, like Muhammad Ali, they were war protesters when it wasn't popular, and at great personal risk to both of them. Jane was the daughter of a Hollywood star and, a wife and, a movie star. And she went to Vietnam. She went places where she wasn't. She went to Black Panther protests. She got arrested. She became an activist. And last week, when she was talking about this, she talked about this was her ticket to freedom. Doing these things. She said she became a better actor. She became a better person. She became herself by becoming an activist because that was really her calling in addition to being an actor. So fast forward to today, she's 88 years old and she's going to the No Kings protest tomorrow and she's going to Minneapolis and she's speaking and she's marching and she's still doing her thing. And the way she promoted responsible risk to this crowd at the South by Southwest conference was she got me to act, right? So I have lots of excuses why I'm too tired to go to the protest tomorrow, but I'm going. And she asked me, I feel like Jane personally asked me and another 1,000 people to go. And I'm going and I'm bringing someone who hasn't been yet. And that was her ask. As far as healing goes, I think we all need to find people that inspire us to do the right thing for us, right? Promoting responsible risk, she's a great example of that too, because she's asking people to protest, but not without training. And Martin Luther King did this too. Like everyone gets trained, everyone gets tools, everyone, yes, you're going to put yourself at risk, but people are going to have your back. You're going to have training. You're going to know what you're getting into, right? So I think there's this continuum of riskiness and recklessness, and we just want to be in between, right? We don't want to be completely risk adverse, and we don't want to put our employees or loved ones in unnecessary risk, but we want to have informed, calm risk. Like I know I live in a state that has open carry, and there's going to be people with guns at this protest tomorrow. Does that make me happy? Or, does that make me want to stay home? Yes, but I'm going to go anyway. And I know what risks I'm taking.
You brought up this comment she made about freedom. This courage gave her freedom. What is your thinking? Because I hadn't put the two concepts together, this idea of courage and freedom.
I think in order to become who we're really supposed to be, we have to be courageous, For me, it's a very embodied thing. When I am doing things that I know are right but are difficult and I do them, it's the spiritual experience of feeling free, right? When I'm not being courageous or I'm not aligned with who I am, the feeling is opposite, right? It's being imprisoned, maybe like that might be too much of a metaphor, too much of a stretch, but feeling out of alignment, feeling like not myself, feeling like I'm compromising. I mean, I had an experience of that yesterday. I found myself yelling at the top of my lungs at my 16-year-old niece, who I adore more than anyone on the planet. I've known her since she was born. This is probably like the worst we've ever had a struggle. And I did not feel free. I felt terrible. I apologize. We work it out, but I think it's good to know when you're being, and that definitely came from fear. So I think courage comes from freedom, and fear comes from my human darker places.
For some of our listeners who are like, I don't know about going to, I'm all for practicing courage, but I don't know if I'm going to go to a rally or whatever you want to call it. Daryl, I'm curious, like in your really broad and deep professional experience, how do you think about, or can you recall courage at like sort of a basic, like everyday business level? How did you experience that or witness that in the workplace?
I'm reading this, been reading this book, and I listening to it, and it's really about trying to find out what your true purpose is in life. But you have to be old enough to reflect about to reflect on how many years you've lived and what you've done during, but accurately assess how you did, what you did, why you did, and that's going to kind of dictate what you do now or what you're supposed to do now. So I have this spiritual advisor who is a, I've talked about him before, Father Joe. He's a 95-year-old Jesuit. He's written a book about discernment. And in discernment for a Jesuit priest, he's been a priest for 77 years. He knows what discernment is all about. He knows what self-reflection is all about. But what he talks about is alignment between your head, your heart, and your hands. What's going on in your head needs to be in sync with your heart before your hands go out and do. And when that happens, there is a flow. And that, I think, when you talk about action, when you talk about doing things, having the courage to go out and stand by what that alignment is pushing you to do, that's the freedom. Therein lies freedom, because I have sat with this, I have meditated on it, I am in sync. My body is in sync with what I'm going to do next, because I am now going to go out and do the practice my true purpose, right? But you have to get there. Now, some people do that and they don't spend a lot of time in meditation. They don't spend a lot of time in self-reflection. Some people are in their 30s. Muhammad Ali was in his 20s, his late 20s, when he knew what he had to do. Not all people do that. To stand out from the crowd and say, this is my stance, to do the unpopular thing because you know you're in alignment with yourself and in doing so, humankind. It's fantastic. And in business, I knew that I wanted to help people. I was able to assess what the business was built on. It was all about making money. How can I stay in alignment with my passion and what I'm supposed to do in this business, which is the media business, and make money for this company, because that's the only way I'm going to get paid. That's the only way I'm going to get paid, right? And I wanted to make a lot of money. So where is it? What can I bring them that's going to make not just a little bit of money, but a lot of money, and therefore get paid a lot? Because if you're not getting paid a lot, you can't make decisions. You have to be a decision maker. I learned that early on, right? I was on the air in the first part of my career. That's what I wanted to do, thinking I was going to talk to millions and talk, well,
Well, you got a great voice for it. You got a great voice for it.
And they were going to listen to me, and they were going to be moved, and all that, right? And then I soon realized that there was a program director who was going to tell me what I could say and what I couldn't say. And at that point, I said, I'm out. I'm out. I need to be the programmer. I don't need to be the voice of the programmer. I was able to develop programming that gave ABC access to a bunch of people that they didn't have access to before. They were not providing programming to Blacks and Latinos. So all of a sudden, they said, oh, those people have money and will spend money too? Are you sure? Yes, I'm sure. Give me a chance on this. So they finally did after a few years. And they made a lot of money. And in making a lot of money, they had to pay me a lot of money. And in paying, they didn't want to. I know they didn't want to. Deep in my heart, I know they didn't want to. I was still an outsider, but I was doing what the baseline said I had to do. And the baseline said I had to make decisions that were going to make a lot of money, because that's what this country is based on. You know, it is power and money. It drives everything. Those two things drive everything. And sometimes it's the same. Power and money are
Yeah, that's right. Inextricably linked. I'm hearing some themes around courage in business, courage in life. It's about a lot. In many ways, it's about alignment. It's about internal values alignment. It's about alignment with the business needs. Real impactful leaders are going to have to access courage that's in alignment with oftentimes both of those things. Laurel, as you think about, I mean, you've worked with so many leaders. Are there lessons or themes that you see across different leaders you know as it pertains to courage?
Well, I think I can go back to our principle and practice here, right? When we work with individuals, we talk about courage being a visionary. When we work with leaders, we're asking those visionaries to let other people be visionary, to inspire other people to be visionary, and to promote responsible risks, meaning empower other people to grow and make decisions and find their courage and find their creativity. That's hard for leaders. There's a shift in I'm the creative, I'm the powerful person, I'm the decision maker to I need to empower others, I need to help other people grow, I need to let other people make mistakes. You know, I experienced that as a leader, and when I interview compassionate leaders, it's very much a theme. We have some fun podcasts coming up. And one is I'll give a little hint. I met someone who's very successful and very kind and very compassionate, and I said, "Were you always like this?" He goes, "No, I used to be an asshole." Like, what? I'm like, that's the story I want you to tell on the podcast, right? I'm like, so how did you become not an asshole? And he was like, well, we can attribute most of it to my wife. I lost everything as an entrepreneur, and I chose to learn from that and become a better leader, right? So sometimes transformation comes from pain. There are plenty of leaders that are not compassionate leaders. We're reading about them every day. We're hearing about them every day. There are leaders that are cruel. There are leaders that are narcissistic. There are leaders that are greedy. And what we're talking about here is you can be successful if you choose a different way.
In a sense, I think about short-term versus long-term gains, right? It's like you can be sort of, you know, you can lump the narcissism and the cruelty into this sense of sort of a, I think of it as like an exploitative approach. It's like, yeah, we can dig and exploit and get results today, but man, we're gonna see the cost down the road, right? But that's for another podcast.
I'm thinking about what are the lives that Daryl's grandchildren are going to lead, right? Right. So I think it's never too early, whether you're a 20-year-old leader or a 70-year-old leader, to think about the legacy you're leaving because of your decisions beyond your lifetime.
Yeah. You know, a quick anecdote. I've got three kids, 8 and a half, 6, and almost 4. And my 8 and a half-year-old was in the back seat and he was learning about global warming. Yeah, we talk about it here in Texas, believe it or not. And he was talking about plastic. And he's like, well, what do you mean it's here for like, it doesn't go anywhere? And so he was thinking, we were talking about what that means. The level of plastics we're using, or the, you know, increasing temperatures here. He's like, what does that mean for when I'm your age? I'm like, exactly. An upsetting conversation. And he's like, well, what can I do about it? I was like, now we're talking, kid.
What a responsibility you have right now. What a responsibility you have right now. What can I do about it? What, first of all, the fact that he asked that question is It makes my tears want to stop because he needs to be inquisitive. He's already thinking that way. It's not just about him, right? So when I talk about thinking about humankind, right, he's already out there thinking like, well, what does that mean to the world, right? Right. So an 8.5, 8.64, you're going to have your hands full, but what an opportunity you have, really.
Yeah, that's right. No, thank you for saying that. It really, in between, the busyness and the stress of the day, sometimes it's like the greatest privilege, right? To be able to bring this next generation into the world, to be thinking about action and, picking up trash at White Rock Lake and things like that. But we've talked about history, talked a bit about healing. Let's talk about hope and looking ahead. And I'll start with you, Daryl. What gives you hope? It's a big, wide question. Take it where you will, potentially, as you think about courage and hope.
You know, Laurel touched on it before. We have leaders who are narcissistic. I believe that we are humankind looks back, can look back and see what's happened in the past. I think that societies can say, well, this is what happened in this country when it was led by a narcissistic leader. This is what happened in this country. Eventually, the people came together and overthrew this narcissistic leader. So this ties into what you were talking about. So that kind of leadership is so short-lived. So I have hope that we're in this short-lived period of narcissistic leadership. I have hope that the most advanced country in Western civilization will come together in pockets and say, what can we do to bring us all back together? What can we do? What is, and then that goes back to purpose and leadership and alignment and faith. What can we do? What can we contribute in getting this done? Because where we are now, the realization of where we are now, we're not going in the right direction. Right? We're not going in the right direction. So, what can we do to turn that around? I have hope that there are pockets of this country and in different states that will eventually say we need to look out for one another. And when we have people who are at risk, when people are getting hurt, when people are afraid to go to rallies because someone in that there could be carrying a gun, there's something wrong with that. That is not the country that, I will say that's not the country that we are supposed to be. It shouldn't be risky to go out in the world in this country. It should not be risky. So what are we going to do? What is our purpose? You at the young, tender age you are, you're a mom, but you're doing something that's going, that you believe and you're passionate about something that's going to make things better for our society, right? And that in turn is going to make your children feel, oh no, I'm supposed to contribute to society because you are modeling behavior that your kids will eventually put forth too.
Thanks, Daryl. What about you, Laurel?
Well, this conversation is giving me hope, so thank you for that. Again, I was just at the South by Southwest conference, and it was an extraordinary experience that I will never miss again if I could help it going forward. And I saw a lot of really young, smart people creating things that are good for the world. And I want to do a shout out to a couple things. So There is an organization called the Human Rights Foundation based in New York, and they are using AI for good. They are providing highly secure websites and communication systems to dissidents in countries that are led by dictators. And they can literally put up a website for resistors and protesters and like in 5 minutes, where they can help people all over the world create community and safety. That's pretty amazing. And I left the conference feeling like, yeah, AI and technology could be bad or it could be good, but we have to remember the humans are in charge. The humans led the civil rights movement, the women's movement. Humans can lead a movement, and there are many smart people leading a movement to influence policy changers and others so that technology doesn't hurt kids and doesn't hurt people. And I think we all have to get behind that movement. I do feel hope. There was a lawsuit that was won by a person who became addicted to social media, and she won $3 million this week. It was a lawsuit against Snapchat, TikTok. They both settled before the court case, and Meta and YouTube fought, and they both lost. Anyway, there's a lot of things that are hurting our kids and hurting our society that we could have a say about. And just like tobacco, lawsuits change that industry. We can change tech for good. So I have a lot of hope.
Last night, I was diving into the World Happiness Report that was put out a week ago. And I'm typical, like a lot of us read the happiest countries and see where the US keeps dropping and sort of leave it at that. And I thought, I'm going to read this report. And I got to the top of the report and it was like projected reading time, 61 minutes. And I was like, gulp. Okay. But there's a couple of things that I'm hearing here in this conversation that I think I want to highlight, which is that they ask people in all these countries to self-report on positive and negative emotions. There were a couple of societal factors that had the largest effect on someone's positive emotions they experienced, and that was someone's sense of freedom and someone's sense of being surrounded by generosity. Right. So they looked at GDP and they looked at people's perceived sense of corruption. They looked at six things. And the two things that affected someone's positive emotions were freedom, the felt feeling like they could live their lives in a certain way, and then generosity, how much giving was happening. And so I think it's really interesting to think that while hope wasn't an emotion that they talked about, hope is, I think, something separate, but it's buttressed by positive emotions. This idea of hope is buttressed by positive emotions, that there's a bit of agency we have in choosing hope, right? And choosing to decide to see the world and things in a certain way and then take action on them. And it can be a heavy lift to do that. It's hard to live courageously, to make that courageous choice. It can be hard to have a feeling about the world and then take action on it. But the happiest people have more positive emotions and in turn feel happy about their lives. And I have to caveat all this by saying there are a lot of people out there who don't have a choice and who are living in dire circumstances, who are surrounded by war and awful things. And so this is, this isn't, this is this comment I'm making is sort of excluding that. But for many of us in Western countries who have clean water to drink and have roofs over our head and sort of have our basic needs met, there's a lot of choice in living with hope. Daryl, do you want to send us off with any thoughts, feelings around courage, how maybe any of our listeners can access courage as they go forth into the world?
I'm going to suggest that no matter how old you are, spend some time alone and reflect on the good that you can do. And then have the courage to go out and do it. Have the courage to go out and act. Because we all have an hour or two a day to give to something that's going to better our community, right? We all have that time. And take during the week. If it's an hour, the time isn't the point. The point is to spend time alone and find out whatever your passion is, what you can do to contribute to our community, and then have the courage to go out and do it. For me, during this conversation, I realized that there is more I can do. There is more I can do. There's, you know, if I played one fewer round of golf a week, that's 4 hours that I have that's available to do something that's going to be the betterment of the community I live in. Right? But I really have to look at it as abundance and not scarcity. Right? I can't look at it through fear. I won't have enough time to take care of myself. I won't have enough time to do this. I won't have enough time. No.
You know that, thank you for that. And you mentioned abundance in the Donnellan Leadership Method. Abundance is one of our 12 principles, and it's a place we access as we think about the presence and our mindset around abundance. So thank you for that little teaser. And Laurel?
Going back to Jane Fonda, my hero, who's getting me out of the house tomorrow, she talked about hope coming from action, right? So I agree with my friend that we need to think and meditate and stop doing things. And then sometimes we need to act our way into good thinking, right? So I would say two things. Do something that's inconvenient this week that can help others. And also, as leaders, think about how you can help other people be brave.
The ripple effect of leadership, right? The enablement of leadership.
You know, and sometimes you have to be tough about helping other people be brave. And sometimes you need to be soft, but helping other people be brave is real leadership.
Drop the mic on this podcast. That was beautiful. Thank you, Laurel and Daryl. I'm educated, inspired, and uplifted by this conversation. I got a bit of a history lesson, and I'm thinking about what my family can do as we head into a weekend to take some action. So thank you. That wraps us on courage. And next time we'll talk about faith, which is number two, a second principle of the 12 principles in the Donnellan Leadership Method. Faith, you know, in a continually secularized world, some people really like pause at faith. And for us, it's not a religious form of faith, though it very well can be for people with whom we work, but it's really this access of spirituality, this belief in something positive and good. And we'll talk about channeling that in life and leadership the next time we meet. So thank you to you both, and I'll see you next time.
And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com.